there is any elector with a potential conflict of interest can't hear. Oh, okay. Microphone appears to be on. Maybe I'm just mumbling, could be. So no foreshadowed conflicts of interest. Then if you wish, members, you might want to move on block the Communications Committee recommendations and the cover page to the confidential minutes of the Finance, Risk and Audit Committee. Moved Councillor Crossland, seconded Councillor Telfer. A question, Councillor Gard? Yes, go ahead.
Yes, Your Worship, it refers to the page 38, firstly, and internal audit plan. And there's a paragraph that reads, while Council has progressed in making significant improvements in organisational safety practices and culture, it should be noted that this progress is now being restrained by complex and overlapping WHS management system processes. And I just found that to be fairly profound.
The good question would be, what are those processes?
Well,
is that what you're thinking?
I'm sort of wondering how long is the hold up and, you know, what is the cure?
Let us put that question to management. What are these complex and overlapping WHS management system processes?
Through the chair, I believe that this is in regards to so SkyTrust, which is the system that they use to manage the WHS incidents. I believe it is in regards to how that system has been set up and the complex layers that sit behind it. We've just recently had a new unit manager start in that position, and they've done a full overview and has suggested that the back end of the system is overcomplicated and could be simplified.
So through the chair, can I answer a second question? Is it a complicated exercise? Is there likely to be an undermining of our safety precautions, or is it something that is manageable? I think is probably the best way of asking.
Through the chair, if I can. It's an administrative tidy-up process more than a policy practice or system process requirement. What we have found is we've got data which goes back many years that if a person has left our organisation, their details have not been deleted from the SkyTrust system, and it's still showing potentially that a matter is open and hasn't been closed properly. So it is a behind-the-scenes data cleansing process, not a system practice process concern whatsoever.
Thank you. And thank you for picking that up, Councillor Gard. I'll say one thing, you're a stayer, working hard right up to the finish line. Now, we've had a question. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favour? Carried. You. Yes, Carrigan. I'm not sure if he was waving hello, but I think that was in favour, so it's carried unanimously. Excellent. So now we, having moved into confidence by adopting that cover report, we turn briefly to one short confidential item. So the elected members and I'm just explaining. So it's really for the benefit of members of the public. We have a short confidential matter to discuss because it involves an ongoing dispute with that council has with another agency. So we can't afford to show our cards publicly. That's essentially the reason that we've adopted for the interests of ratepayers, really. So I'll have to ask members of the public to leave for a short time, and you can stay in the foyer. I think it's only for a matter of 5 minutes, but it's hard to predict. And then we'll resume the normal meeting.
It's an infrastructure. There was said to be a comprehensive revaluation for the reporting period 30 June 2018. I wanted to know whether there was, when the next revaluation came up, knowing that the conditions out there have changed rapidly in the last 12 months, is there going to be any alteration to the course of revaluations?
Thank you. Yep, straightforward question. Mr. Barnwell.
Thank you, through the Chair. It's a good question. We had a full comprehensive revaluation back in 2018. The next full comprehensive evaluation is forecast for this financial year, which is 22-3, which is a five-year cycle. In the interim, we do undertake a desktop revaluation with external valuers every year on our infrastructure assets, which accounts for about 76% of our assets outside of our land. So it's fairly comprehensive even though. So we are keeping up to date, but the idea is that we do a full comprehensive valuation in 22-3 year. Yeah, which includes physical site visits, et cetera.
Thanks, Councillor Gard. Next question.
The next one, on page 95, the figure of 2.441 million is set for open space reserve. And somewhere in the body of this agenda, I did read where that was considered to be reasonable, I think is probably close to the meaning I read. But given more recent conditions that we have experienced in particularly urban infill, I know we've had a lot of discussion backwards and forwards about the prospects of buying more land. I think an example might have been for the Edwardstown area. So should we not be, there are actually four criteria that are used for the open space reserve collection, and they're enumerated in this report, so there's no need to go through them, but there's no particular strategic criteria where we might have stood back and said, well, do we really need to take a deep breath and reassess what the open space reserve should comprise now, given the latest developments over the last 5 years particularly?
Thank you. Well, let's have a comment from management on that, Mr. Barnwell.
Through the Chair, the open space reserve, that is funded by developer contributions, as you know, so there's no council don't contribute to that fund every year. We have had a build-up of up to, I think, $2.4 million is where it sits at the moment. So that is available for open space development, through urban infill, et cetera. So we're trying to fund open space. But it's not a decision that council makes to actually cash fund that every year through the budget. You'd have to allocate certain funds within the budget. I think we've had a position where we're not going to keep pushing money into budgets as is required. We do have the opportunity, as we're in a pretty good financial position, to be able to undertake borrowing should we need to develop, whether it's in open space or acquisitions of property, etc. So this, I think that decision is really around, are we going to ask our ratepayers to contribute funds to sit in the bank account while we're looking for opportunities, or do we go ahead and plan these projects and fund those projects as they arise? I think that was the question which we kind of dealt with through the budget review. 22-3.
And if I could add my simplistic mayoral perspective, I mean, we haven't discussed, certainly not openly as a group, any major open space acquisition. We do have coastal walkway hanging in the background in the long term as a financial burden. But there has been a de facto policy in the last few years of running down reserves. We had too much money that we'd taken out of ratepayers' pockets to keep in the bank. And so that might be a modest amount. It's more than enough for small acquisitions, unexpected upgrades and so forth. But the question will come if we decide, let's buy five housing blocks to create a new park somewhere, which we don't currently intend to do, then the options will be rate rise, use up the reserves, or borrow, and that'll just have to be a decision at the time based on the finances. But it's my suggestion would be it's a fairly unremarkable figure. Commentary question allowed.
Yeah, I guess in my head, this question comes from another topic, and that involves the sale of something. And it's often been said in the backwards and forwards in this topic that were, for example, a piece of land to be sold because it is considered redundant to needs, then if it were in open space, in an open space area, those funds would be committed to the open space reserve. And so I just wanted to get clear in my head as to what the process would be. Is it right to say that they would by default go into that reserve or not?
True, the chair. Yeah, any sale of land holdings, that is the other way to fund that reserve. They do actually go into the open space reserve. Yeah.
So on to your third question, I think, and that would be the...
I noticed quite a few typos in the annual report and perhaps a few grammaticals, but one or two were right up front. And for instance, there are differing figures for numbers of volunteers in one section and on virtually the same page, another figure. So I'm just wondering if management would be prepared to take a bit of a critique from me in the next few days rather than hold this meeting up.
But please email your suggestions. I must admit the Mayor hasn't, since we're in caretaker mode, the Mayor hasn't proofread this edition.
Right. I'm just thinking more two heads are better than one or one.
So, yes, we management look forward to your email. Thank you. Other questions? Councillor Telfer and then Councillor Hull.
My questions relate in the annual report to, I guess it's page 40 of the annual report, local nuisance and litter control, but it was a general one travelling around the city at the moment, all about what teeth does this local nuisance and litter control actually have if I lodge a request in. I get back LNLC, but that doesn't tell me much more. There is a graph down the bottom.
Which page, please, Councillor?
It's page 40 of the annual report, but it's not clear to me. It may be page 208.
No, that helps us. Thank you. No, please finish the question. Thanks.
Yeah, there's a graph at the bottom of things like smoke, noise, odour, animal dust, unsightly littering. So for me, it was very interesting how few offences are expiated, prosecuted, and also, littering is the only one that people actually tend to expiate. So my questions are, how are we dealing as a council with these matters, and also the one that's currently dear to our hearts, the height of the weeds through all the pocket parks throughout our city.
Right, who would like to answer that, Mr. Harrison?
So through the chair, if I can, please. Just a general comment, if I can. Littering, I guess, for us is difficult in the sense of the person responsible for the littering and the degree of proof on a balance of probabilities or something of a higher order to actually be able to expiate or take action. I find it very rare to actually see somebody litter. You might see it occasionally, a cigarette goes out of a window, a can of Coke, very, very occasionally, but it's certainly a rare thing for me to actually see people litter where you can then appoint or apportion blame and accountability for littering. So my guess is we get complaints because litter is seen in curbs, footpaths, or in vacant blocks, but probably very difficult to actually identify the person responsible to issue an expiation notice or to take a matter through the court process if that was even appropriate. I think we all recognise at the moment that we are going through an exceptional, extreme set of weather circumstances with the weeds, the grass, and even prior to this meeting, there was some general commentary about the fact that I would suggest all councils, certainly the metropolitan ones, but all councils are experiencing extreme challenges to keep up with the scheduling of mowing, detailing of reserves and open spaces. We are actioning them in real time as I become aware of information pertaining to a reserve, a park, a private property that is overgrown, that we are certainly trying to keep on top of those as quickly as we can, even though we're finding ourselves cutting and mowing in addition to the fortnightly routine and schedule and sometimes a weekly basis in some of the more prominent reserve type areas. I also understand, I think we circulated to elected members or some elected members certainly last week, this week, that our ability to force owners of private property to slash and cut back their vacant blocks is quite difficult at the moment because we're outside of the fire danger season, and certainly come the fire danger season when it's declared, if it's not different to commencing 1 December, will certainly allow council to then action through contractors, predominantly the clearing of some of the private vacant land or property, which is difficult to actually police at this stage as well. It seems like we're going to be in for another 4 or 6 weeks of extreme winter growth. If you look around and look at the weather predictions at the moment, it doesn't seem like we're going to move into a drier spell overnight. So I think this is going to be an enduring ongoing problem for at least another 4 or 6 weeks that we're going to be challenged with the rapid growth of the winter grasses. And we do know that some of those are certainly in excess of a metre high on roadside verges, private properties, and even down the central part of medium strips of roadways across Adelaide at the moment.
Councillor Telfer.
So I commend council on its reserves generally and ovals and so on. I can see that they're being done. My concern is, how does council register what we nominated as pocket parks, those small pieces in streets, the small pieces at the end of cul-de-sacs that are currently unkempt and untidy? We brought this up 4 years ago. I'm not sure what plan of action council has on these.
Please, if I can, through the chair, and I don't want to sound defensive or making excuses, but I think the challenge that we do have is there are insufficient number of contractors in the state of South Australia to keep up with the extraordinary demand that we're all experiencing across our local governments at the moment. So we can't even acquire additional services to actually do the remedial pieces of work that's required at the moment. So hence, our own staff are trying to increase the frequency and the schedule of mowing across those spaces which you've mentioned. I certainly drove around many today as I was out and about, and I was quite impressed with the reserve areas, our open spaces. A lot of them really did seem to be in very good order. It was more of those, as you suggest, cul-de-sac areas, private property, maybe some of the more natural open spaces, which are challenged by extra growth at the moment. And also our staff are telling us that if they actually go out and cut when the grass is too wet, we do see the chunking of the cut grass, which is mounding across the reserve areas, which can actually look very unsightly as well. So we are challenged. There's no doubt about that. I'm not making excuses. I think that's the reality of the circumstances. And certainly staff, with our contractor support, will attempt to get through and on top of it as quickly as we possibly can.
So Telfer, anything more? No. Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, I just wanted to bring you back to an answer you gave to Councillor Telfer, that council's not planning on buying any properties to create open space.
And sorry, just to correct you, Councillor Hull, I know that there's a standing order, so to speak, to look for open space in the Warradale area or maybe other strategic areas, but I meant that there's no specific plan. But you go ahead if you wish.
That is a very specific plan, Mr. Mayor, and we've, Nathan Pryor and myself, ensured that it's a standing agenda item on our ward briefing because of the lack of progress. This is years old, this motion. And then when I heard you say that, I felt a bit deflated, to be honest, in terms of Councillor Pryor and my quest to actually bring that council resolution about.
Yes, I think it's not really the time for debate, but any specific suggestions you have for sites, please forward them to management. Did you have questions about the financial reports?
Well, if I can indulge and ask a question about litter, there's current debate happening at the moment about shopping trolleys, which is something that dear to your heart, Mr. Mayor. It's the government's declared their litter. And I'm just wondering from the CEO, if they are declared litter, why are they proposing to actually persecute and prosecute the shopkeepers who aren't responsible for litter? They simply own the devices. So that's my question.
Well, I'm not sure it's specifically referred to in the financial reports, but I wonder if Mr. Harrison can add anything to it. Probably Mr. Della Coombs or someone in that area might be across the specific issue, but he's not with us tonight. Mr. Harrison?
Thank you, through the Chair. I can only try and attempt to provide some commentary in the sense that I'm not sure what you mean by declared litter. I haven't heard that sort of language around the shopping trolleys, certainly accepting that they are a blight on our streets and our neighbourhoods when we see them either a single one or in groups of them that have been left or dumped in our streets, in our suburbs. You would be well and truly across the attempts of many, many years to address the problem from multiple different perspectives. And it's one of those that we try and keep on top of. And I know personally that when you've sent me through details of groups of shopping trolleys and side streets, we've immediately responded to go and clean those up and get them returned within 24 hours ourselves. So I think it's an effort that we all have to take up to try and identify where a shopping trolley is or where shopping trolleys are and attempt to get it remediated as quick as we possibly can and get them returned, as you suggest, to the shop owners who really aren't responsible for people taking them outside the boundaries of those shopping centres as well.
So, Councillor Hull, I know there's been discussion for some time that shopping trolleys be deemed to be litter. I'm not personally sure if the change has legislatively taken place yet, but you're suggesting it is, but clearly there's not knowledge.
In terms of the consultation process, the government's deemed that they're litter and as a starting point.
If there is consultation open to councils, I would have expected Marion Council to put forward a view consistent with previous council decisions, but we'll have to just leave that at the moment. Any further questions, Councillor Hull? Now, I thought there was one on my left. No, Councillor Crossland then. Thank you.
Mine was just a bit of a follow-on from Councillor Telfer, and I did hear what the CEO said. But when it comes to mowing and some of the areas that need weeding, which are not the mowing areas, but some of them are in key locations, it has been something that's been raised to me quite a lot. Do we have the ability, or is the CEO authorising our staff to look at working weekends or overtime to try and get on top of it?
Through the Chair, we certainly haven't commenced overtime or weekend work, but I'm certainly happy to take that away from tonight because we are experiencing, as we're all aware, an extreme set of circumstances at the moment, and it may be a way that we could look as on a short-term basis of trying to get better on top of the issue. It will obviously have some financial impact, but I'm more than happy to take that away tonight and see whether that's an option for us. Yeah,
it's evident that it's a fairly broad community concern. Yeah. I think quite a few of us have had the same feedback. Yeah. I had one question, one observation. Question I had was that I did have a look at the what we call the SWARA or the Waste Authority reports, but I couldn't see the budget line whereby the councils get a dividend or payment from surplus. Is that in there, Mr. Barnwell?
Yeah, through the Chair. Council, we don't get a cash dividend from SWARA. We do get an increase in equity, which is reflected in our financial statements. So if you look at
so it's just a
so basically we get a 30% share of their profits. So in 2021-22, which is a non-cash, it's basically our stake in the business is actually increasing. So it's gone up by 0.882 for their profits. They had a $2.4 million profit in 2021-22, and they also had a small bit of reval as well, which we get a share of that as well. So
that's what I was checking. Essentially, it stays in the separate business,
yeah,
and therefore we benefit from that interest, but we're not getting a dividend.
No, but our equity stake goes up within those businesses.
Understood. Yeah. Councillor Crossland is actively on that authority board. Did you want to add to that, Councillor?
Just the other thing, the way in which we do sort of get money back is as a shareholder, we get a much reduced gate fee, which keeps our costs down.
Thanks for that. And the other one, it's just referring to an item in the annual report on page 203. I suppose that's page 203 of, yes, of the agenda, tonight's agenda, but review of decisions when members of the public ask for a review per the Local Government Act of a council decision or process. And I just note as mayor that I have previously asked to be advised of all of those. And I note that there's one there that I hadn't heard about. And so I just think, you know, upholding the highest principles of democracy, a mayoral request to be advised of those issues would be a reasonable request. No need to respond. It's just a comment from the chair. Councillor Schilling.
Can I ask which one you hadn't heard about?
The Oakland's, what is it, Oakley Road Ramps one. So if there are no other questions, we've got a mover and seconder. Yep. I can put that to the vote. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. That's wonderful. So the Chief Executive and I will sign off on those reports. And that takes us down to page 226, the Community Event Fund. Let's deal with that one separately. It's quite a unique sort of topic. Moved, Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Crossland. If there are no other takers, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. And so if the questions taken on notice register and Work Health and Safety monthly report might be taken on block, I moved Councillor Telfer, seconded Councillor Duncan. Questions acceptable? Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just a question with regards to questions that have probably been received by members and other candidates throughout the election period. When do they go public for residents to see? So I know they're not in here, and I remember seeing correspondence saying that register would be kept and potentially go public. Is that correct?
Try Ms. McKenzie.
Through the chair, we are keeping a register of all the requests that are coming in from candidates. So that includes city members and candidates. We can make it public. I don't think we necessarily, I'll just need to double check what it says in the caretaker policy. I'm not sure that we have made it public before, but it is available. We are certainly keeping it. I'll just check what we've got within our caretaker policy and let you know.
Yeah, and I just wanted to note privacy concerns as a consideration, but Councillor Schilling, go ahead.
Supplementary to that. Doesn't have to be public now, but whether it goes public after the election. But can any candidate or sitting member currently ring council and ask to see what questions have been asked? Whether, don't have to know names, but is that feasible?
Yeah, well, it's a council document. Subject to, obviously, I'd just like to check what's in our caretaker policy. We are certainly keeping that register of the questions that are being asked and the information that is being given out.
Thank you.
Because that hasn't been specifically addressed, I just want to add the thought that disclosure prior to the end of the voting period could lead to electoral advantages being given to the people trying to find out the information. Yes, that's right. No, just sounding a note of caution, because we don't want council administration to be seen as partisan one way or another, and the safe way might be at the conclusion of the voting period. But point taken, Councillor Schilling. Thank you. Councillor Gard.
Your Worship, just in relation to the WHS monthly report, the Table 2 hazard and near miss report, so I noticed there was a really sharp kick up from 4 reports in May 22 to 11 in June, which may or may not be an aberration, but I was wondering if there was a comment there.
Mr. Harrison.
Through the chair, it's directly a result of a marketing campaign to try and encourage the organisation to better report near misses. So we can actually be alert to them and actually respond to them. Certainly over the last 2 years, we've probably dropped off in relation to notifications, which is a good proactive tactic, as long as they're sensible and logical. So that's what it is, just a marketing of it through the workforce.
For one horrible minute, I thought they might have been caused by marketing.
Oh, well, marketing is responsible for a lot of... if there are no other questions, I'll put that to the vote, those two items. All those in favour, raise your hand. Yes, that is carried unanimously. Thank you. And now we proceed to page 233. On this occasion, staff have spoken to me about motions without notice. And please allow me to briefly explain. At the end of last year, when we set down the schedule of meetings for this year, we scheduled two council meetings in November because, I mean, who would have thought there'd be an election period going on? We really only need to have one, which is mandated by law. I'm advised by management that there is only one item of business that at present is anticipated for the 8th of November when we have a scheduled meeting, and that is a relatively straightforward motion from Councillor Gard. So I'm allowing two motions. Of course, it's up to you what you decide to do with them, but one would be Councillor Gard's motion without notice. In fact, it was lodged a few hours after the cutoff date for this meeting. So, but it's without notice for this meeting in the proper sense. And Councillor Gard can explain that. And then following on from that, if that matter is, however that matter is dispatched, we can then entertain a motion to abandon the meeting of 8th of November and simply come back for the mandatory one meeting, which would be 2 weeks after that. So that's the situation. It is the mayor's discretion. I've allowed those two motions to be entertained. Logically, Councillor Gard's would go first. So you may move your motion, Councillor Gard. And it's put up on the screen. I don't know if it's been emailed to people just, but only a short time ago.
Yes, if I could just read it to clarify it for public consumption, that future rates notices be complemented with a succinct outline of the stepwise method by which rates are calculated, including the precise meaning of rates increase, which refers to total rates collection. If I could make comment now on that.
Yes, of course.
I think everyone's going to guess what I'm going to say in general context, but this does emanate from a number of feedbacks that I've had from my ward residents, and it's in a year where it wouldn't be unexpected because of the huge variance in valuations that has occurred. And of course, happily or unhappily, whichever way you look at it, in the coastal ward, revaluations have been up to the limit in terms of the 10% maximum rates increase, and people are rather confused as to what the 2% rate increase means versus the 10% that they might have gotten due to the happy revaluation of their property in an equity sense. So to me, I thought it was very timely on two counts. One, we have this extreme potential for volatility up and down in revaluations. And two, we're going to have quite a few, what we'd call in racing, maiden councillors trying to field the queries next year. So to commence for at least a period of time to support rates notices with such an explanation, which really deals with the stepwise way that the rate in the dollar is determined, and emphasises the fact that your rates do not solely depend upon the valuation of your own property. They depend on the relative valuation of your property to the whole valuation of the council. And we've discussed this many times, and I've been heavily involved in a very long football match over that. So
thank you. Your time is up. And I was going to check with you if you wanted the word stepwise in there, but from your speech, I can see you're quite attached to it. All right. Is that seconded, Councillor Masika? Thank you.
Thanks, Your Worship. I'd like to second the motion as prescribed on the screen. And the reason I'm doing that, the feedback which I'm getting from the ward, you see, people that are not, they're quite happy to pay the rates, but they see the rates going up and up and up. They don't know how. And by having this methodology of stepwise to show them how it's being calculated, it will help a lot for people to understand that we are not raising them for the sake of, you know, lifting them up, but there's a proper method and they can see where it's coming from. So I quite support the motion.
Right. The stepwise explanation is endorsed. Anyone against? Then I'll put Councillor Valescu. Yes, go ahead.
My rate values. I recently bought the house. The rates are different to when I bought the house. So is there other information and would we need an adjustment to this motion?
Councillor Valescu, if I might offer a comment, the challenge for staff, I mean, there's nothing inherently untoward to the motion, but the challenge for staff will be to flesh out the explanation of how rates are calculated without writing a book about it. I mean, somebody probably has written a book about it, but this is to go in a flyer with the rates. So we're talking about something, as Councillor Gard has carefully included in his motion, a succinct outline, and maybe that's all we can do. There'll be a lot of those variations, Councillor Valescu, like the extra room and so on, which just can't be addressed in that finite space, I suspect. Any comment from management?
Through the chair, I can only suggest that the succinct in nature with as best explanation as possible. I also wonder whether the LGA should take on a responsibility for an education campaign on behalf of all councils. I think that's where you'd probably get the greatest impact if it was from a whole of state perspective.
That's right. We're paying them $100,000 a year to provide that sort of information to the public. Councillor Crossland.
Thank you. I've had the same experience as Councillor Gard. I believe Mr. Barnwell's put out a bit of information previously in City Limits and in other circulars. The only thing that I'd just add as a suggestion to this motion is, as was anticipated by a lot of residents, it's that first rates bill that you get when it goes up. I'm not so sure that if people pay quarterly, that needs to be in every one. It's really the first time they look at it and they compare it with last year and they get the shock. But I was able to explain it fairly briefly to them because I was asked the same question a lot. But as Councillor Gard has said, it takes a bit of getting your head around. And unless you've had Mr. Barnwell's experience to explain it probably two or three times, it does need to at least go in that first rates notice.
Well, members, a couple of good suggestions and comments there, but I think the motion is sufficiently directive but broad enough to allow staff to make sense of it, if I may say so. Anyone speaking against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Just put the nose over the finish line there, Councillor Gard. Just in time. And we now have a motion that's drafted by management that council cancel the general council meeting scheduled for 8th November 22. Chief Executive Officer published the cancellation of the council meeting scheduled for 8th November 22 on the City of Marion website. That's moved, Councillor Schilling, as printed. That's seconded, Councillor Valescu. Anyone against? And I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hands. That's carried unanimously, and I declare the meeting closed. Thanks, everyone, for your cooperation. This being the last council meeting of, well, unless there's a special one, of the council term. I wish everyone well for the future, whether it be the election or what lies beyond. Thank you.